The PFD application is open. Just a small amount of your PFD will help share local news and stories about Alaskans with Alaskans across this great state when you choose Alaska Public Media through Pick, Click, Give.
Coming up on Hometown Alaska, host Dave Waldron sits down with members of the Alaska Black Caucus to discuss their work, celebrate Black History Month, and learn about the upcoming Bette Davis African American Summit. And on State of Art, join me, Ammon Swenson, for a conversation about the play Conscience. It's about Margaret Chase Smith going against Joe McCarthy during the Red Scare, and the show will be having a short run in Cleveland. I speak with the lead actors about the play's current relevance and more ahead of their trip. That's all coming up next on Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media.
The PFD application is open. Just a small amount of your PFD will help share local news and stories about Alaskans with Alaskans across this great state when you choose Alaska Public Media through Pick, Click, Give.
Hello and welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm Dave Waldron, and on today's show, we'll be celebrating Black History Month. And even though we only have about a week of February left, there are still lots of ways to do that, including a summit being held this Friday, which we'll be hearing more about later on the show from my guests. And I'd like to welcome them now. They're both members of the Alaska Black Caucus, CEO Celeste Hodge Groudon and Economic Chair Weta Morrison. Welcome both of you to Hometown Alaska.
All right, it's great to be here. Thank you so much for the invitation.
Yeah, great to have you. So I want to get into the specifics of the ABC and both of your roles there, but just starting really basic for our listeners, remind us, what is a caucus and how are they formed?
So the Alaska Black Caucus was actually founded in the 70s, 1975 to be exact. And it was formed to create opportunities for people of color, Black people and other marginalized groups in the areas of health, education, economics, and justice. And so that plays out in so many different ways as we look at the disparities here in Alaska. We try to do everything we can to eradicate those disparities. Let me just say, we have a very ambitious agenda. We are here for our community to help them better their lives, to help them be better individuals. So we are just out here in a big way, helping our communities and helping to eradicate disparities in those core areas I mentioned.
Yeah, and a caucus is, I think, traditionally thought of as a political group, right? Someone that pushes a politician or a political agenda, right? But the ABC is nonpartisan.
We're a nonpartisan 501c3 organization. We do get into the get out the vote efforts. In fact, at the Bette Davis Summit that we will be having at the end of the month, February 28th, that get out the vote component piece is going to be a part of the summit. In fact, it's a get out the vote carnival. And we really want to encourage our communities to do just that, to get involved in the political process so that they're participating, that they're actually being informed on what the issues are, so they're receiving the education, and then they're participating in the political process by voting.
Right. I think a lot of Alaskans didn't even know about caucusing or what it was until that election of 2008. If we remember it, the Republican Party had that really tight election between Mike Huckabee, Ron Paul, and John McCain. And then everyone was at the Egan Center trying to caucus for their candidate. So, I mean, as a nonpartisan group, what role does your caucus serve once you remove that political affiliation? You said getting out the vote is important. What are some other things that are important?
Well, it's just important. I can't stress it enough to be informed on what's happening in our community. And so we provide those avenues. I mean, we host events like the Get Out to Vote Gospel Fest at the churches. We have a draw. And so even with the summit that's coming up, we're bringing up Club Nouveau. And that's the draw, to get people to come to the event so that we can share this important information about voting. So it's a get out the vote with Club Nouveau. And it's also an opportunity to listen to some great music, have some really good fun, see other people, and obtain that information that we're going to be sharing about the importance of boating.
So, Wida, let's hear from you. When did the ABC form? You said it was back in the 70s.
Well, from what I know, it was 1975. No, I wasn't here. And some of the people that actually was some of the founders of ABC back in the 1970s are actually still alive and still participate with ABC events. People like Louis Overstreet, who actually has participated in our community conversations, which is another method that we use to educate people about different topics in those areas of health, education, justice, and economics. So we do our community conversations on Sunday. Again, he's participated. Other people like Walt Furness has also participated, who were former, way back in the day, people. But they're still around, they're still active, and they're still very committed to making ABC a success.
And how did you get involved, Wida?
Well, for me, I like to volunteer in my community. And I believe that, you know, as a person who lives in a community, we should give back to our community. So when I found out ABC was resurrecting or being reborn, because again, some of those individuals had gotten older, some had passed on and gone on to glory. But it was, you know, like anything else, you've got to get some new people to come to the table. So I'm one of those people that I believe you should do something about it rather than just simply talk about it. So for me, it's a passion. It's a passion to give back. It's a passion for people to get education, because unfortunately, I think a lot of people don't know about a lot of things. And I know we have our lives are busy. And sometimes it's like, maybe if we can get people to get the information, even for voting, for example, we want them to get information. We're not telling them what to do or how to do it. But I found out many years ago, a lot of people don't even understand our system, whether it's our local system or national, they certainly don't understand it. And civics 101 is not taught necessarily, certainly not in K through 12 grades, but in colleges even, you have to sometimes seek those things out.
So is a lot of the ABC based with volunteers doing a lot of the work here? Is that my understanding?
We are volunteers. I'm a volunteer. Yeah, I have a full-time job, yes.
Right. And Celeste, you as well, or no?
Well, I'm actually a volunteer. I've been a volunteer since I've been doing this type of work. I mean, because really there is no pay for getting involved in this. It's a lot of work. It's exhausting work. But I did recently receive, the Alaska Black Caucus received a grant from W.K. Kellogg, and it allows me to receive a stipend, which started last year. So even though I've been in this work for over a decade, I am now receiving a stipend. I won't even say a salary, a stipend. But I want to just stress the importance of being there for our community and for our community to get involved. I am really disappointed to see where we're at right now, not just in our community, not just in our state, but in our country. All of the hard-fought gains that were won are reverting back, and so we're going backwards. And we cannot continue to watch the parade of all the injustice happening from the comfort of our own balconies and not do anything about it and not get involved. And so we have got to do a better job when it comes to participating in our community and getting folks to get involved in what's happening, or we're going to continue to go backwards, and we don't want to go back.
Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit, the progression and regression that's going on in the country. What's the most challenging thing about watching that ebb and that flow, and where do you think we stand today when it comes to civil rights and equality for the African-American community?
So for me, I love history, and I say history is a great teacher. But even looking back from the emancipation of slavery, and that was in the 1800s, and moving forward to, you know, separate but equal education, which was a case that decided that called Plessy versus Ferguson. Then we get to the 1950s, of course, 54, Brown versus Board of Education. We get to the 1960s, 1964 Civil Rights Act. So there were many things that happened legislatively that I always say people could have voluntarily done and should have voluntarily done, because, you know, we are all equal. We're human beings. Although some did not see us as human beings, and even today probably that's true. I would say that where we're at now, unfortunately, is sort of this pushback and rollback. And how I feel as a Black woman in America, in Anchorage, Alaska, is that we are, in a way, trying to be erased and erased from history. We're not given the credit of the things that we have accomplished, because we've accomplished a lot. As a matter of fact, I mean, we look at it from even scientific perspectives, or some of the things that we enjoy today, such as even Zoom. The technology was created by a Black woman, which a lot of people don't know that. And so we know we have contributed as a people to the country. We haven't gotten the credit. We've tried to be erased. And as far as civil rights is concerned, there's a lot of confusion, I will say that out there, about what is civil rights, what is the law, which is Title VII, and we have Title VI. So we have a lot of laws that were put in place. However, a lot of people have heard DEI, which has been demonized. DEI is not the law. DEI simply put diversity, equity, and inclusion so that everyone had a seat at the table. People get more comfortable with one another, know who they are, know their neighbors, and that there was representation. And with representation and inclusivity, there was a better end result. Because if we all thought the same and we were all sort of sitting around the table and we have one person, sort of one think, we would not have the best product. So that was the intention, and that really started getting pushed even back in the 90s, was that inclusivity. But that is not the law. And again, I think there's been a lot of misperceptions even about that.
Do you think the Alaska Black Caucus's focus has changed over the years because of these ebbs and these flows? And as current members, what are the biggest priorities today in 2026?
For me, I think it's education, because I think knowledge is power, and people really getting that knowledge, that's the first and foremost. Because once people are educated, then they can actually get on board with what they can do too as individuals to move things forward. And we don't want to lose traction. So I think educating people is very critical. And so with the summit, that'll be an opportunity certainly for them to get some education too in those various areas. But we want people to be educated.
And what about you, Celeste?
I think it's a combination. I think also economics and financial literacy is important. I mean, there's just so many ways we can respond to this question, because, you know, all of it's important. And there's work to be done in all of these areas as it relates to our communities. And so one thing that I love about the work that we do is we focus on the Black community and marginalized communities in everything that we do. Let me just say, the majority of the programs and the events that we host, we don't charge a fee for. We make it so that it's not a burden on anyone, because the information that we share at these summits or different programs like the Corrine Davis Graham Cancer Telethon is vital information that can help our communities live longer and healthier lives. And so, you know, that's why we're so thankful to our donors who provide the funding to our organization so that we can get out there and do this work and bring in experts in these various areas, like from when we host the Cancer Telethon, you know, we bring in people from Fred Hutchins Cancer Center out in Seattle. And it's just, you know, it's a lot of work, but we benefit from it because it helps our communities. And so that's why we do this work. Whatever it takes to make our community stronger, that's what we thrive on. And so while this work is tiring and sometimes people don't appreciate it, sometimes individuals that are, let me just say, not happy to see our communities be successful, those individuals that come and post on our building disparaging comments or words or epithets, I mean, just negativity and racism, you know, the phone calls that I get that are threatening and demeaning because of our work, it just really makes me stronger. So it's sad to say that there are people that aren't happy, that we are striving to lift ourselves up by our bootstraps. But, you know, we'll continue to do this work because there's a need.
That's unfortunate to hear. I mean, has that gotten worse?
For me, it's gotten worse. It's really? It's not good. And, you know, I was just thinking about my brother who shared with me. He said, Celeste, you know, are you sure you want to keep doing this? Because, you know, I'm concerned about your safety. Or, you know, my son-in-law, who, by the way, is not black, he's white, and he's concerned about me and the way this whole community, well, this country is going. It's just unbelievable, mm-hmm. because we're not hurting anybody. We're trying to help people, our people. And I just think about, I shared this the other day when we were interviewing, but I even think about the expo, the Black Expo that was held at the museum last weekend, I think it was, and the negative comments that came from that. Now, that was just an opportunity to showcase businesses, Black-owned businesses, and there was no harm in doing that. And yet, it was not well received by some people.
You know, thankfully, I do believe that the majority of people are on the right side of right. At least that's my hope. I'm trying to be an eternal optimist, I suppose. But I do believe and I do hope that most people are on the right side of right. Sometimes they just don't know what to do. But one of the things that people need to really consider and think about is correcting your family, correcting your friends, addressing it. We do, along with our allies, because we do have a lot of allies who happen not to be black people. They're white. But they believe in being on the right side of right. And I think that's important, too, is we all, and we know throughout history, it's been at least allies who've helped and supported, again, throughout history, from the days of slavery to civil rights. And so, again, I think, you know, people that are allies have to really speak out, too. And coming from those allies, sometimes it's much, well, I believe it'll be much more well-received or better received, especially coming from someone closer to proximity.
And when we talk about allies, not only do we have like over 100 allies within the Alaska Black Caucus, but I even think back to 1909 when the NAACP was formed, and they had allies back then. They, you know, it just wasn't black people that formed the NAACP. I think of Mary Ovington, who was white. She was a social worker. She was one of the leaders who worked to get that organization established. And like Wita shared, we can't do this work ourselves. We know that. And so it's incumbent. I mean, we appreciate our allies that stand with us. I mean, really, they're the wind beneath our wings and helps us to achieve our mission. I, too, agree that there is more support than there isn't for the Alaska Black Caucus and the work that we do.
That's good to hear. And we're going to get more to that after our break. Time for us to take a short one. When we return, I'll have more from Celeste Hodge Groudon and Wita Morrison, both with the Alaska Black Caucus. I'm Dave Waldron, and you're listening to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media.
I'm Shelby Herbert, a reporter with the Alaska Desk. That's a joint reporting effort from Alaska Public Media and KUAC, where I work in Fairbanks, and other public radio stations in Anchorage, Haines, and the Aleutians. It allows us to connect you with the issues happening in communities all across the state. You can hear our stories during the morning news, Alaska News Nightly, or online at alaskapublic.org. The Alaska Desk is only possible with the support of grants and listeners like you. Thank you.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm Dave Waldron, and today we're celebrating Black History Month with my guests, who are both members of the Alaska Black Caucus, CEO Celeste Hodge Groudon and Economics Chair Wita Morrison. They're sponsoring an event on Friday, the Betty Davis African American Summit. It will be taking place right up the street here on APU campus at Grant Hall. So, Celeste, the theme for the summit is Bridging Generations for Justice. Can you elaborate on that, or would Wita, would you like to take that one?
Well, I'll just say, you know, it's great to be able to connect with our seniors. You know, when I think about the history of our seniors and the wisdom that comes from our seniors, I mean, we would not be here without our seniors. And so the purpose behind our theme is to really bridge our young people with our seniors and to continue that relationship building in such a way that just continues to allow us to be close-knit people as a people, but also to continue to learn from our seniors. There's so much wisdom in our seniors. And when we connect our seniors with our young people, it's a beautiful sight. And so I'm looking forward to that.
Yes, I agree. So, you know, as growing up, when I was a kid, I said one of the best gifts I ever had was being around my grandmother. And then my great-grandmother was actually still alive then, too. So I had people that I knew, even neighbors and extended family. They weren't blood family necessarily. But, I mean, I remember Mr. Duncan. Mr. Duncan was 100 years of age.
Wow.
But Mr. Duncan was still a spry man who could actually had his memory. He could do things. But he had a lot of wisdom. And he'd tell all these stories, which was so fascinating to me as a child, just learning about how people lived. I mean, they lived at a time where they didn't have electricity. They didn't have running water. But the history of how they survived and thrived, even with all the challenges they faced. I mean, my grandmother, when she grew up, she was a sharecropper. Her family was sharecroppers. So they moved all over the place. They couldn't stay in school. So they had very little education, but they had a whole lot of what they call common sense. And so she definitely had a lot of common sense. And I learned a lot from her, which I am so grateful for. And a lot of times people don't have those opportunities, and especially in Alaska when they're separated from family, they don't have that community or that village. And I was fortunate enough when I grew up, I had that community and that village. Again, they weren't all blood relatives, but there was a lot of older people around and they had a lot of knowledge and they would share these stories. And so we have to understand where we've been to understand where we're going. And I would encourage anyone, if you still have your seniors alive, grandparents, great-grandparents, record them. Mm-hmm. Have them to just tell you stories and record them, because then you can save them, too, for generations to come. And you can say, well, that was great-grandma or great-grandpa, and they can tell that story even though they may or may not be still here with us on Earth.
And the other thing I think about, too, are family reunions. I mean, I see the summit as an opportunity for us to have a family reunion. And we all know what happens at those family reunions. You know, they're just great times. You see seniors there. I mean, you've got your uncles there. And you learn about your history. And as Weta shared, too, you know, opportunities to see where you're going to go. And so this is just another opportunity to come together as a community to learn information on those topics we discussed already: health, education, economics, and justice. We've got presenters that are coming from out of state. We've got, as I shared already, Club Nuvo, Jay King. He is also the California Chamber president in, of course, California. And so we're going to have him speak during the economics piece. And there's just a lot of presenters that are coming from out of state to participate at the summit.
Right. And Celeste, I mean, other than the obvious answer of attending the summit, what are ways Alaskans can get involved in this?
So Alaskans can get involved by going to our website at thealaskablackcaucus.com. You have to include the word the. And there's volunteer opportunities. There's also information about the summit, the particulars about the summit, who you can connect with, volunteer opportunities. And so plenty of ways to get involved in the Alaska Black Caucus. And as I shared a couple of times already in a different setting, you do not have to be Black to attend this event. It's open to the community. Again, it's free. And we welcome you. Just be sure to come and introduce yourself to me. I'd love to meet you.
How clearly you said that, I feel like there's a lot of misconception out there that you do have to be Black to come to this. So
that is a misconception. Our focus is, again, to help the Black community and other marginalized communities. But all of our events are open and free to the public, with the exception of the Club Nuvo event, where we're trying to raise money to offset all of the costs to put these programs together. But other than that, you're welcome to come. Anybody's welcome. Everybody's welcome. Just come on and join us. You know, if you believe in our mission, which is to champion the lives of our people, of Black people and other marginalized communities, you're welcome at every and any event that we host.
So free all day long and then a concert at the end?
The concert is the night before.
Oh,
so
it's the night before.
We're kicking off the summit with the Club Nuvo. You remember the song, Lean on Me?
When you're not strong.
Yeah, we're not the greatest singers.
Of course.
Here. But you know what we mean, our rumors. So that's going to be at Willowa. You can go to Eventbrite to get your tickets for the concert, which is going to take place Friday night.
Got it.
The summit is on Saturday at APU Grant Hall.
Perfect. Thank you for clarifying that. And Weta, I imagine as the economics person in the room, people can donate to the ABC and for this event as well.
Absolutely, 100%. Even if they can't attend, all donations are welcome, and we encourage them all the time because, again, we are not-for-profit, and we have to continually raise funds. So any amount is a good amount.
That sounds very familiar as we sit in a public radio studio.
Yes.
Well, I think a lot of Alaskans remember Senator Bette Davis fondly. I know she was for me. We hosted her here at Alaska Public during local election debates. I got to meet her a few times. What do you think her legacy is as the first African-American senator in Alaska?
Well, let me just respond by saying Senator Bette Davis was a personal mom to me. I worked on her campaign. I worked as a staffer when she was senator. I was her Senate aide to health committee when she chaired it in Juneau. And so we were really close. And Senator Davis hosted the very first African-American summit. And she always wanted to host another one, but she was extremely busy and never had the time to do it. And so in her legacy, we continue the tradition of the Bette Davis African-American Summit. And so this year will be our seventh year of hosting the summit. And I think Senator Bette Davis would be proud.
And what about you, Wita? Did you ever get a chance to meet her?
I absolutely did. And she was a fantastic, wonderful person. And she was really the conscience of the Senate. I mean, everybody respected her regardless of party. It didn't have anything to do with that. When she spoke, they listened and they took, you know, heed to what she was saying. But she was always trying to do what she could to make a difference in the community, whether that was her time on the school board, whether it was her time, you know, as a part of the legislature. Even when she was not reelected to the Senate, she came back and she went back on the school board.
Right.
And she wanted to make such a difference in the community at large, but also she was really looking out for the next generation and children. She was really passionate about doing something for children.
And let me just remind your audience, too, that she was the chair of the Alaska Black Caucus back in the day.
Oh,
so
okay.
She was even a member of the caucus with Dr. Louis Overstreet, who served as the president. So she's got a long history in Alaska. And our community not only valued her, but respected her. As Wita shared, Senator Bette Davis didn't play. I mean, for those who knew Davis, she was about business, and she really loved children, and she would do everything she could for her community.
She really did command respect when she walked into the room. Even her opponents knew it, and you could kind of feel them shaking in their boots a little bit when they had to debate her. Well, let's talk about what else is going on with ABC. I understand there was an equity center built downtown Anchorage just last year. Tell us more about that. What's going on there?
So the Equity Center, again, a gift from God, really, because he put people in our place that provided the funding for a small Black-led organization to be able to do something significant like this, to purchase the center, to have all the funds to renovate it. And now we are hiring our staff to operate out of the Equity Center. We'll have programming in there. Again, the commercial kitchen is available for individuals that love to cook. And so we see a lot of youth programming going on in the Equity Center, financial literacy, just all kind of classes. And we've got a tenant that has already rented the downstairs SEI union, their caregivers union. And so they've agreed to rent it for 3 years. And so we've really been blessed. We're looking for other tenants that might be interested in renting space. And so if you are, please visit the website for more information. But it's a beautiful building. It was originally built in the 70s, but you'd never know it if you were to walk into the building today.
I would say, well, you know, in addition, Celeste mentioned the commercial kitchen, and then we have office spaces also for rent. But in addition, we have a multi-purpose room. We call it the computer room because it does have the technology capabilities, but it can also be rented out for other occasions, whether it's a reception or birthday. So we do have that available, and we encourage people, again, to go to the website if they would like to rent that space at any point in time.
And actually, it's called the Bette Davis Technology Center. It's
right
on the name tag that's on the outer.
Perfect. Has the word gotten out about this yet, or is this still something that's kind of unknown to people?
I'd say it's still unknown.
Still unknown for the most part. I mean, we do what we can. Certainly, but yeah, we haven't done a media campaign or anything to make sure it's available, but it is available.
Yeah, I mean, it's still pretty new. It's only 7 months about.
Well, once upon a time, you would drive by and not even know it was the Equity Center. But now we've got, you know, the big sign up there, the Equity Center, and I get calls. I just saw your building. It's beautiful. You know, so we're pretty proud of the work that we were able to accomplish with the help of our community.
And where is it located specifically? Is it Barrow?
It's 605 Barrow Street.
605 Barrow. Okay. Well, this question is for both of you. Besides attending the Bette Davis Summit, that's the obvious answer. What are some ways people can celebrate Black History Month?
Well, I'm going to say this. We have Black History 365 days a year. So we don't have to just focus on the 1 month because we live it every day. We all should live it every day. Black history is American history. And so what I would encourage people to do is really learn real history and the contributions of Black people, whether they're in Alaska or throughout the country. And some of the things that we benefit again from today, if they know about them, then they would probably be pretty surprised even at some of our everyday things that we use. They would be shocked that it was created, or instrumental at least in the beginning, with Black people creating it. So I would say we learn our history, but we don't have to wait and just do it only in February because we have it 365 days a year.
And just to add to that, as I said at the very beginning, we have an ambitious agenda. We are always running programs. We always have something going on during Juneteenth, and not just during Juneteenth or Black History Month, but every month there's activities and programs happening. And so stay current by visiting our Facebook page. Like us on Facebook because that's more active and it's in real time, if you will. We've got, as Wita shared, the community conversations that are every Sunday. And it's just an hour from 7 to 8 where you learn information about what's happening within the Black community during that time. So I know just recently we had a conversation about soul in the cemetery, about Black people who are buried in the cemetery downtown. It was enlightening. I mean, we had Dr. Cal Williams, who presented it as Black Coffee with Cal, where he was just sipping coffee and talking about the history of those that are buried in the cemetery. The ombudsman, Daryl Hess, was a part of that conversation with him, as well as Jewel Jones, who was the director of the health department for decades. So there's just lots of information. Just like us on Facebook and stay current.
I would like to go to this Cal Williams thing. He has one of the best voices I've ever heard. I've met him before and told him he should start a radio show. I don't know if he has been on the radio, but telling those stories on the radio would be a pretty nice combination.
Well, I definitely agree with you. We use Dr. Cal for so many conversations. He does have a great voice. And even more important than that, he's got so much knowledge when it comes to history of people and Black people in particular of our community. And in fact, just recently, he hosted a community conversation on unsung heroes. And that was an opportunity for our community to learn about Black people who
contributed, you know, to history in Alaska, if you will. But they're people that are not known by the masses. So they are not like the Honorable Senator Bette Davis, whose name everyone, I would think, no, but they are people that are everyday people that made differences and made a lot of contributions in their own right, but the masses don't know about them.
Well, let's talk about that just for a minute. What are some historical Black figures that you can both think of that you wish more people knew about? And I'm talking not just Alaskans, but in general.
Oh, gosh, I can think of actually quite a lot of them. What about Mary McLeod Bethune? That's someone nationally.
Okay.
She started Bethune-Cookman College, which was a Black institution. It's still in existence today. You think of people such as Ida B. Wells, or you think of local people that people probably really don't even know about, and some of those will be talked about. Some of the things that they did, whether it was, they called her Miss Wiggles. I mean, those are the people that we have heard about. I personally didn't get to know her. But we hear these stories of a lot of Black people that were here many, many years from Captain Healy, which a lot of people didn't realize was black. Also, Fire Chief, the first Fire Chief, who happened to be a black man, which they did not know. They thought he was Anglo because of the way he looked, until his sister came up to claim his body. And she was a lot darker complected. But either way, I mean, we want people that are not necessarily known to be known, because they did make a lot of contributions here.
Well, I think about local individuals like Linda Penningwell and her sister that created the first black calendar in Alaska. And I mean, it was circulated annually, and it was a great job in just really pulling together the history of so many black people that was condensed in this calendar. And so they would have this annual calendar, which was incredible for back in the day. And we would all get copies of this calendar. Of course, Dr. Cal contributed to that as well. But and I also think about the gardeners. I think about Miss Hattie Gardner, who actually participated in a community conversation last week. There's so many people that are unknown, but that did great things in this community, or doing great things in this community, that we need to call out or have a shout out.
Well, this goes to both of you as well. Since the goal of the Alaska Black Caucus is, quote, to assert the constitutional rights of African Americans in Alaska, do you think that goal can ever truly be achieved? I mean, you're talking about these problems we're dealing with. There's obviously always going to be inequality and racism, but can the goal of constitutional rights asserted for African Americans be truly achieved?
So I'll start. And I believe in order to begin going down that path, we have got to do a better job of voting. We've got to either start running for office ourselves so that we have our interests at the forefront, or we've got to get out and vote for those individuals that support our interests. And I think that's how we start to make change. Because right now, you know, when I think about voting, I think about what's happening with this whole voter ID piece, and how this requirement is coming into play where it's making it harder for people to vote. Now, who's going to vote to either make that happen or eradicate it? It's the people that we put in office. And so I'll start there.
And what about you, Wida?
Voting is critical. It is critical. Some people don't like the system, or they say, well, the system doesn't work. But it's the system we have. So we have to work with what we got until we can change it. And how do we change it? We have to have the right people elected in order for it to change, if change is going to happen. Because as it is now, you know, if it's going to stay the way it's going to stay, then this is what we've got to work with. But we have to educate ourselves, and we have to actually actively vote again on the right side of right to make certain that our voices are heard, and things that are inclusive of all people and for the greater good of all people, and not just based on, you know, sort of slanted views, but inclusivity. And yes, we do have to educate ourselves and be at the polls. And I am a super voter. I do not miss elections. I've been voting since I was 18 years of age, and I do not miss an election.
Absolutely. So if people want to keep up to date on what's going on with the Alaska Black Caucus, is there an easy way to do that, Celeste?
There is such an easy way, and that is to like us on Facebook. If you like us on Facebook, you're going to see all of the different programs and just ways that you can get involved and volunteer at some of our programs. And it's something that will help us out as well, because we can then reach out to you when we're in need of some assistance in our programs. Like, for example, we hosted the Hoops for Unity, which is an opportunity for kids to play basketball with law enforcement police officers to build the relationship. I mean, especially within our minority kids, we want to change the trajectory on and what history tells us. So we want them to have great relationships with our law enforcement officers. And so we were short on refs. I mean, we didn't have enough refs. So if you're a referee or if you always loved basketball and you wanted to help out with that event, then we would, you know, be in contact with one another. But the good news is we host Hoops for Unity annually. So there's always next year.
And we're always looking for volunteers, whether those volunteers are to help us with the annual Betty Davis African American Summit, or if it's to help out with anything that we're doing during Juneteenth or Black History Month or Black Business Month. So we have a lot of opportunity, and we do utilize volunteers, and people don't have to feel like they're overburdened by volunteering for 365 days a year. They can do it event by event. So we certainly welcome volunteers who want to work on certain events, and we'll be happy to have them.
And can I just add really quickly? So we have four core committees: education, economics, justice, and health. And we are always looking for individuals to help serve on those committees. And in fact, right now we're looking for someone to oversee our education committee. So if that's you, look us up.
They might be listening right now. Well, I want to thank my guests, Celeste Hodge-Groudon and Weta Morrison. They're both members of the Alaska Black Caucus. Thank you both for coming in and taking the time to talk to me.
Thank you.
Thank you for the invitation. Looking forward to continuing to connect.
After this short break, we'll be back with State of Art. I'm your host, Dave Waldron, and you're listening to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media.
From Alaska Public Media, this is State of Art. Welcome to State of Art, your weekly dose of Anchorage arts and culture. I'm Ammon Swenson. Coming up, a local production from RKP Plays will be heading to Cleveland at the end of the month and will be holding preview shows ahead of their trip. The story follows Senator Joseph McCarthy's abuses of power during the Red Scare's anti-communist crackdown and Senator Margaret Chase Smith's efforts to counter him. Preview performances will be in the Wilda Marston Theater at the Anchorage Library Sunday and Monday at 7 p.m. We're joined by lead actors Jay Burns, who plays McCarthy, and Susan Riley, who plays Smith. When Burns first read the script, he was struck by the similarity to our current political situation.
We're in a very interesting political moment right now, and I think a lot of the roots of it really go back to the Red Scare. I know it seems like a stretch, but when I learned that Joe McCarthy had as part of his un-American activities effort Roy Cohn, the attorney who became a mentor to Donald Trump, there really is a continuum in the conversation between what was going on then and what's going on now. And whether you agree with it or not, I think it's a really interesting discussion to really examine how we portray ourselves in the political sphere.
Yeah, how about you, Susan?
Well, my initial reading of the script, actually, of course, I focused on Margaret Chase Smith and realized that as a teenager, I was very aware of Margaret Chase Smith. It was toward the end of her career in the Senate, and I only knew of her because she and I had very different opinions on national defense. Hmm. And I didn't realize this whole other side to her career, and was amazed at the fact that she really was a three-dimensional character, a woman who was very complicated. And I have learned to bond with her through this role. She was a very brave person, and I learned to admire her in retrospect.
You know, since I've got the two of you in the studio, you know, you both play the lead characters in the show. What was it like kind of playing against each other in, you know, these kind of various scenarios in the story? What was that like?
You know, what's fun about this this small and amazing Anchorage community is that you track other actors and you're like, oh man, I'd love to share the stage with her one day. And I've been tracking Susan for some time now. It's really great to go fisticuffs with you, Susan.
Yeah, we have a really good time, actually. It's interesting that the relationship between the two of them, although it becomes very fraught, is actually quite playful. And mm-hmm. we have a lot of fun, actually.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about this really cool opportunity that you folks have. You're going to be taking the show on the road.
Yeah.
We're going to Cleveland.
Yeah,
so
right.
what's the situation with that? It kind of sounds like there's a cool Alaska-Cleveland connection.
I love it. So Darl Schaff used to make art up here and theater and do, I think it was wearable art shows. Is that right? And moved to Cleveland, and took over a space and made a theater out of it. And that's one of my favorite things about Alaska, by the way, is just that we make so much of our own art at such a high level that sometimes, you know, we become a seed for other communities to really start to grow their arts community out. So it's wonderful. So some people involved with him came and saw our show when we were on the Anchorage Community Theater stage and told him, you've got to bring this show down to the Darrell Center. So our amazing producers at RKP worked it out, and, you know, we're going next week.
It sounds like you're going to be doing a few performances, too, so it's not like you're just going to be popping in and out, you know, jet-lagged and flying in and out. So, what's the situation with that, just in case we've got more Alaska friends in Cleveland?
Doing four performances in Cleveland, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, February 27th and 28th, and March 1st. As a matter of fact, my daughter, who lives in Wisconsin, is driving to Cleveland, so there will be a former Alaskan, at least, in the audience.
I am very excited. When we realized that we were going to be restaging this somewhere else, though, we really said, you know, I've heard from at least 40, 50 people that are like, oh, I wish I could have seen that play, or it's such amazing things. And we said, we've got to find a way to do a preview here before we go.
Yeah. Well, let's actually talk about that really quick while it's coming up. So it sounds like you're going to be doing a couple of preview shows at the Wilda Marston Theater at the Lusac Library Sunday and Monday. So, I mean, is that just pay what you want, or how does that work?
Yes, it's pay what you can. It's to give us an opportunity to get in front of an audience again before we go into performance, and also an opportunity for people who didn't get a chance to see it, or those who might want to see it again will be there again. It will be a bit more bare bones than a full production, because that particular facility, we won't have the lighting that we would have ordinarily, but the script will be there and will be there.
You still get to see Susan and I go fisticuffs.
Well, and it sounds like even if maybe you did see it, it sounds like maybe the script is one that, you know, it would be worth a second viewing just to maybe kind of pick up on some of the nuances.
I have heard a lot
like
of friends that say, oh gosh, I got to see that play again.
Yeah. So.
Well, I do have to say too that coming back to this play 6 months after we did it, because our current situation nationally has changed, our interpretation of the play has possibly changed a little bit. We're bringing more to it than we were 6 months ago. We all noticed it our first return read through, where we went, oh, this is sounding a little different than it did originally, because it's not a static, a play is not a static thing.
Yeah.
It changes.
And especially, I think my part, I kind of came in, you know, because Joe McCarthy instigated a lot of hurt on a lot of people. And as I was rehearsing my lines and getting ready for our first rehearsal, I told my cast, I said, this is hitting different this time, you know, just with what's going on in the world. And, you know, I mean, these philosophies are really coming to a head right now in our national dialogue about how we portray ourselves and what values, you know, we choose to take care of in the public space. And so it feels different.
Yeah.
And sometimes I had to stop and just say, I need to recalibrate with how that feels as an actor.
Going back to taking it on the road, what's the general feeling amongst the rest of you folks about heading down to Cleveland?
Oh, we're so excited.
Very excited. Yeah.
Well, Susan, so since I was only able to speak with Jay, last spring about, you know, playing Joseph McCarthy, kind of embodying this character that, you know, maybe is fairly dissimilar to himself. But, you know, we've kind of discussed a little bit about you getting into the shoes of Margaret Chase Smith. You mentioned you were familiar with her as a teenager, but you weren't necessarily familiar with this kind of fight against McCarthy. But, I mean, how did you ultimately, like, prepare to, portray this real-life character?
I didn't want to do a deep dive before I had familiarized myself with the character in the play, because this is a character that's based on, I mean, it's using her history and her name, but it's the invention of a playwright. My loyalty is to the playwright. So I didn't start out with a whole lot of information about her, except my pre-existing knowledge of the McCarthy era. And then after we got into a little bit more, I started doing a little bit more research about her and reading more. But mostly my goal as an actor is to stay true to the script and allow that character to come through. And I hope that whatever I'm doing up there maybe piques the curiosity of other people to do some research of their own and find out more. But I didn't try to sound like her. I tried to not look horribly different from her, but I do, so there's nothing I can do about that. It's just the idea of making a three-dimensional character based on what I'm given by the playwright.
How did embodying the character of this real person maybe kind of affect you as an individual? Like you said, did it change your perspective on anything, having to embody her at all?
Oh, certainly. She makes me want to be braver. She was a very courageous person. Maybe not even realizing how courageous she was being. She thought she was just doing what was right, but she took real chances and almost lost her career because of it. And so it kind of makes me want to step up a little bit and be a braver person, for sure.
Is that maybe your hope for other people that watch the play?
Oh, really? Certainly. I think that the most important message that I convey in this play is that an individual does matter. And speaking up does make a difference, and you need to do it if you have the opportunity. I certainly hope people take that away from the play.
There are a lot of people that I talk to right now that feel very, very down, very, very hopeless about our current political situation. Doing this play in particular, I'm reminded every day that real change can happen and that your voice does have power and that this isn't forever. Where we are right now is not where we're going to be in the future. And how we behave today is setting the seeds for where we're going to go.
Sticking with the portrayal of characters representing real people, what would you say that you learned from the character of McCarthy after having portrayed him?
I mean, I keep coming back to I read these things in history books, and I get this one-dimensional idea of a person, and this is what they were all about. But, you know, but as Susan's character, as Senator Smith says in the play, he's charming. He's funny. He's interesting. He's passionate. And even though I don't agree with what he's passionate about, it's there's a certain infectiousness to it. There's that recklessness that he goes out and just says what he thinks and tells it like it is and or like it isn't. But he claims
like
it is.
He wants it to be.
You know, I was reading about narcissists the other day, and the idea that a big thing with them is if they feel it, then it must be true. And I think he really does that well. He says, this is what feels true, so I'm just going to say it as if it is the truth. And then if people respond and believe it's the truth, then how is it not the truth?
Yeah.
And it's, you kind of think, I would never do that. But that kind of mentality is very infectious. And it's, I think, a strange thing that it's maybe been a byproduct for me is when I feel something very strongly, you know, that I hear from the news or what, I suddenly stop and say, wait a minute, is what I'm feeling, is it what I'm wanting to feel in my internal echo chamber? I try to challenge it. I try to, I've become a better critical thinker as a result of portraying somebody who is abandoned critical thinking for political expediency.
Well, and from coming from Margaret's point of view and watching McCarthy in action, it's a bit of like watching ping pong to see how he pivots from one idea to the next. And that's one of the first realizations, that he doesn't necessarily have any continuity to what he's doing. He goes from, it was this way, no, it was that way. And that was my first realization as a character. I go, wait a minute. That isn't what you said a few minutes ago.
No. I think my biggest takeaway in this political moment is that studying Margaret Chase Smith, in and out of the context of this play, she's a case study in how you defeat fascism. And that cannot be understated. She stood alone. She did it right. She stuck to her values and her principles. And ultimately, she won.
I'm not going anywhere.
I'm not going anywhere. I love that line. Just standing firm and, the threat of him destroying her, she says, I'm not going anywhere.
What is the most rewarding aspect of this whole experience for you getting involved with Conscience?
I've been throwing around the funny term zeitgeist in the last year. Since we did Cabaret at Cyrano's, it feels like that play, that this play, that other things we're working on, it feels important to be telling these kind of stories in this moment, and to be talking to diverse audiences, regardless of who they voted for in the last election. The fact that we're talking about these complex ideas that tap into identity, that tap into values, that tap into what is America and what should America be tomorrow, it's really rewarding to be working in that space. And I'm so grateful to RKP for doing this kind of challenging work.
I took on this role mainly because I felt as though it was my opportunity to offer something to the discussion. I feel it was really important for this play to be produced, and I have been eternally grateful to RKP for the opportunity to portray this character who was really important to our history, and I'm proud to tell her story.
Is there anything else that you folks would like to add about the play, the preview, or heading to Cleveland at all?
Mostly we want you to come see the preview.
You know, it's worth it. It's worth coming out to see.
It's thought-provoking, and it can be. You could take it as depressing a little bit, but it's also very funny in parts. The playwright has a sense of humor, and so do we.
So do we.
Yes.
We're charming.
Well, I wouldn't have known it talking to you. Well, thank you so much for coming in. I really appreciate you talking to me, and good luck with everything coming up, and congratulations.
Thanks for doing the program. I never miss it.
That was my conversation with the leads of RKP Plays' production of Conscience. Jay Burns plays Joe McCarthy, and Susan Riley plays Margaret Chase Smith. They're taking the show to Cleveland later this month and will be performing preview shows in the Wilder Marston Theater at the Anchorage Library on Sunday and Monday at 7 p.m. And that's all for State of Art. I'm Ammon Swenson.
And that's all for our show. Thanks to our guests Celeste Hodge Groudon and Weta Morrison. Ammon Swenson produces this show. You can find us at the Hometown Alaska page on alaskapublic.org, the Alaska Public Media app, or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Dave Waldron, and thanks for listening.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.